time, VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Israel's military says four soldiers were killed in a Hezbollah drone attack on an army base Sunday evening. It's the deadliest Hezbollah strike since Israel launched its ground invasion of Lebanon nearly 2 weeks ago. The Lebanon-based Hezbollah earlier claimed responsibility and called the attack retaliation for Israeli strikes on Beirut on Thursday that killed 22 people. Hezbollah and Israel have traded fire almost daily in the years since the war in Gaza began, and fighting has escalated. Israel's prime minister is urging UN peacekeeping forces to leave war-torn parts of Lebanon as Israel continues targeting Hezbollah. VOA's Arashar Basadi has the story.
In recent days, Israeli strikes injured five UN peacekeepers known as UNIFIL in parts of Lebanon, where strikes across the country have killed 1,400 people as of September, according to Lebanon's health ministry. UN deputy spokesperson Farhan Haq.
The safety and security of UN personnel and property must be guaranteed, and that the inviolability of UN premises must be respected at all times.
Israel has made clear in public statements that it's not targeting attacks on the Lebanese people or UNIFIL, but rather Iran-backed Hezbollah. Following news of the injuries to UN peacekeepers, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu both issued an apology and a warning.
It is time you take UNIFIL out of Hezbollah strongholds and combat areas. Your refusal to evacuate UNIFIL soldiers makes them hostages in the hands of Hezbollah. It endangers them as well as our soldiers.
Parts of Lebanon have now been reduced to rubble and dust following Israeli strikes. Arashar Basadi, VOA News.
This is VOA News. Iran is warning and has no red line as a report emerges about Israel's plan to respond to attacks. Reuters correspondent Diane Toh reports.
Rocket barrages by Iran-backed Lebanese armed group Hezbollah triggered sirens across northern Israel overnight and early Sunday morning. The Middle East is bracing for further escalation as Iran's foreign minister warned in a social media post on Sunday that, quote, "We have no red lines in defending our people and interests." It follows a report by NBC that Israel may be looking to target Iranian military and energy infrastructure in its potential response to Iran's attack this month. NBC was citing unidentified U.S. officials in its report. Iran's attack on October the 1st was launched in retaliation for Israel's military operations in Gaza and Lebanon and the killings of a string of Hamas and Hezbollah leaders.
Reuters correspondent Diane Toh. U.S. President Joe Biden on Sunday surveyed the damage from Florida's Hurricane Milton. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman has more.
Milton is being blamed for 17 deaths and was the second powerful storm to batter the low-lying coastal state in 2 weeks.
Entire neighborhoods were flooded, and millions were without power.
Biden said that such disasters were calls for unity.
The moments like this, we come together to take care of each other, not as Democrats or Republicans, but as Americans.
That was the political message carried by Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic candidate for the White House, as she campaigned on Sunday in North Carolina, a state slammed by Hurricane Helene 2 weeks ago. Her Republican challenger, former President Donald Trump, is among those who amplified falsehoods in the form of conspiracy theories.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. North Korea has said its frontline army units are ready to launch strikes on South Korea. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
The announcement by the North has ramped up pressure on its rival that it said flew drones and dropped leaflets over its capital, Pyongyang. South Korea has refused to confirm whether it sent drones, but warned it would sternly punish North Korea if the safety of its citizens is threatened. North Korea has accused South Korea of launching drones to drop propaganda leaflets over Pyongyang 3 times this month and threatened to respond with force if it happened again. I'm Karen Chamas.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Monday, October 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The government of Malawi says President Lazarus Chakwera is in good health, despite rumors he has not been well.
They have seen the president walking, talking on the street, taking push-ups on the street, and he's attending to activities. He was playing golf today. The president is very, very fine.
Malawi's main opposition denies being behind rumors about President Chakwera's health. The impeachment trial of Kenya's deputy president is expected to take place this week in the country's Senate. The WHO urges increased investments in health at the World Health Summit. Mozambique continues to count votes from its October 9th elections as one candidate claims victory without evidence.
At this point, only Venancio Mondlane has just expressed itself as saying he won the election. However, it did not provide evidence to that.
And U.S. President Joe Biden visits areas affected by Hurricane Milton in Florida. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A man was arrested Saturday outside former President Donald Trump's rally in Riverside County, California, on suspicion of illegal possession of a shotgun, handgun, and high-capacity magazine, sheriff's official says. Several U.S. news organizations, including the Los Angeles Times, quote Riverside County sheriff's officials as saying that 49-year-old Van Miller of Las Vegas was booked at the John J. Benoit Detention Center in Indo on charges of possession of loaded firearms. Sheriff's officials said the arrest did not impact the safety of former President Trump or attendees of the event. No other information about Miller or the incident was immediately available. Trump narrowly avoided an assassination attempt in July at a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. A bullet grazed his ear before snipers assigned to his Secret Service detail killed the gunman who had opened fire from the roof of a nearby building. A rally attendee was killed, shielding his family from the gunfire. Malawi's government says President Lazarus Chakwera is in good health and continues to carry out his duties. This after rumors surfaced last week that the president was not well. Information Minister Moses Kunkuyu says the president demonstrated his fitness by doing push-ups in front of supporters in the city of Blantyre. Malawi will hold presidential elections in September 2025. Kunkuyu tells me that the source of the rumors is the opposition Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP.
The president is in sound health. The president is okay. He has not even complained of not even a headache. He came from the United Nations General Assembly last week. He arrived in very good health, and everyone has seen him getting into the southern city of Blantyre in Malawi, where he even took a walk around the streets. It's all propaganda from the opposition. We are still living in a world where people think lying today and lying today will be sustained the following day, but unfortunately. So they have seen the president walking, jogging on the streets, taking push-ups on the streets, and he's attending to activities. He was playing golf today. The president is very, very fine.
When you say the minister is all propaganda, who will be engaged in such a propaganda?
So this is the opposition Democratic Progressive Party's pattern. Their hand is seen in all this, clearly. They have done it before, and we know they will continue doing it. That is why we didn't even bother to give a response, because we knew that it's all propaganda. But the good thing is that Malawi has no better. Malawians know that this is their way of doing things, and they appreciate the openness from the government that will always provide information to the public.
I saw the photo of the president doing push-ups.
It was very interesting. Actually, it works to our advantage because the speculations that the president was unwell, his arms were paralyzed, that he was dead. There was no official statement from the government. From my office, we did not issue any statement, but we knew that the statement came from what the president did. By walking along the streets, taking push-ups along the streets, that was a statement loud enough that the president is well, and people were excited. It worked to our advantage in the sense that people thronged the streets to see the president. It actually gave us the picture of how people truly love the president because people came out of their offices, out of building windows, just to wave at the president, taking pictures of the president walking down the street and cheering him, wishing him long life.
Moses Kunkuyu is Malawi's information minister. He was speaking with me from the Malawi capital, Lilongwe. Malawi's main opposition Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, is denied allegations by the government that the DPP is behind rumors about President Lazarus Chakwera's poor porter ill health. Chadrick Namalumba is the spokesperson for former President Arthur Peter Mutharuka, who is also the DPP candidate for the 2025 presidential election. He tells me that the DPP wishes President Chakwera good health so that he can be defeated in 2025.
It's really baseless and unfounded that a whole government would sink so low to believe that the DPP, which is a party which is in opposition, would be interested or would be advancing or advocating the death or the sickness of a sitting head of state. That is unfounded. Why would we want to do that? In any case, next year we are having general elections. And as things stand now, His Excellency Professor Arthur Peter Mutharuka is poised to win those elections and wouldn't want a person that we are sparing with to be incapacitated or to die, and wouldn't want to wish him in Chakwera in that way. We are told that that rumor emanated from State House, from government. Why? It's because of late Chakwera has lost popularity and he wanted to put a stunt so that he gets that popularity.
I saw a newspaper photo where President Chakwera is doing push-ups. When we talk about whether someone is healthy or not, can your candidate, Professor Arthur Peter Mutharuka, also show that he's healthy, he's well, by doing push-ups?
When you look at the presidency, is the push-ups one of the requirements for presidency? In the Constitution of Malawi, it is written there, you must be a person of sound mind, you must be over 18 years of age. These are the requirements. You don't need even to demonstrate that you can do push-ups. You don't need to. Imagine, are you saying that if I'm disabled, for whatever reason, I'm disabled, I cannot be a president because I'm failing to do push-ups? That is why we are saying this government must go, because there's no reason whatsoever to be in government. Leadership is not about physical appeal. It is not about, you know, you doing push-ups. No, it is not about that. It is about what capabilities you have as an individual. And for us, we believe that His Excellency Professor Arthur Peter Mutharuka has got the capabilities to lead. By the way, his brain is that of a young man of 19 years. He's very sharp.
Chadrick Namalumba is the spokesperson for former Malawi President Arthur Peter Mutharuka. He was speaking with me from Blantyre. As Mozambique continues to count votes from its October 9th presidential, parliamentary and presidential elections, some international observers, including the Southern African Development Community, SADC, have been speaking about their findings. This comes as independent candidate Benicio Mugala is claiming victory without evidence over the ruling Mozambique Liberation Front Frelimo party candidate Daniel Chapo. Borges Nameri is an election observer from the Institute for Security Studies, a Pan-African think tank headquartered in Pretoria, South Africa. He tells me that while the voting process was peaceful, some international observers, like his, noticed certain irregularities.
Only the opposition mainstream candidate has expressed himself, one of them, Venancio Mondlane. Why I call him mainstream? Because he's the one who is competing with the leading candidate of Frelimo. The Renamo candidate has been silent since the election, and it makes sense because he lost the election. The MDM candidate, MDM is Movement for Mozambique Democracy, said what used to be the third parliamentary party. He is the biggest loser of this election because he will be pushed to the fourth position. So at this point, only Venancio Mondlane, who is the wild card in this election, has just expressed himself, saying he won the election, that he has got evidence from the result sheets from the polling station. However, he did not provide evidence to that. So he claimed the victory, and he said that if the electoral system tried to steal his election again, as it happened last year, he will fight for it, relying on his supporters, who are generally young people from the urban areas. Frelimo candidate did not say nothing officially. However, in unverified Facebook account, he said right that people should wait calm for the final results.
Maybe you can help us understand. I've read the accounts of several international observers, particularly SADC, where they are saying that the voting was peaceful, but yet they also say they saw ballot box stuffing and exaggeration of the number of voters who register. What should we make of this?
Yeah, this is true. This is what has been seen. Myself, I was deployed to observe the election in Nampula province, the most populated province in Mozambique. So what happened is that the voting happens during the daylight, so it's generally peaceful, apart of a minor issue like a crowded and poorly organized. However, the ballot box stuffing is true when it happened. It happened generally after the voting time. So who do that? Those who do the ballot box stuffing are the polling station officers. So once the vote close, they start to add more votes within the ballot box, which is very hard to spot that. This is one way, but also they change the results from when they start to count the votes. They give different results to the candidate, not the one from the polls. Also, another process of manipulation and mostly happens at the level of a district electoral commission, where they just put numbers which don't correspond to what was seen in the polling station.
Borges Namira is an election observer from the Institute for Security Studies, a pan-African think tank headquartered in Pretoria, South Africa. He was speaking with me from Maputo, Mozambique. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 14th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson Omale Sports. The impeachment trial of Kenya's Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua is expected to take place this week in the Kenyan Senate. He was impeached in the House of Representatives for alleged corruption, undermining the authority of the president, and financing the recent anti-tax protest, among other charges. Political reporter Barack Odua of the People's Daily tells me that a scheduled joint appearance of Gachagua and Ruto on Sunday did not take place.
The Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua has lost hope in the Senate that is going to hear his impeachment, because while speaking at a place called Hembu in the central part of Kenya, the Deputy President said that he has a lot of hope that the judges who will be hearing the several cases he has taken to court will be fair as possible. Remember that there are up to 10 cases challenging the impeachment of the Deputy President. The cases have been consolidated into one, and they have been referred to the President of the Judiciary or the Supreme Court of Kenya, Chief Justice Martha Koome.
There were reports in the local media that the Deputy President and President William Ruto were to meet at a church service or somewhere on Sunday. Did that take place?
President William Ruto was to attend the same church function in Kenya's central region, a place called Hembu. They were to share a platform together, but the president decided to change his plans. He decided to remain in Nairobi. President William Ruto steered clear of the impeachment proceedings, but ask Kenyans to pray for his government.
Did President Ruto explain why he did not meet the deputy president?
Yeah, Speaker, he managed to allude to that, although it was not directly addressing the same, but the reasons he gave in the church service on Sunday at a place called Milimani in Nairobi would allude to the reason why he didn't share the same podium with this deputy. He said that that particular church was having a celebration to mark several years of its existence. So he could not miss that particular reason. But politically speaking, I can say that the president was avoiding central part of Kenya because there is currently a very big backlash. Politicians from central Kenya who supported the impeachment of Gachagua are facing backlash, and they are being heckled or they are being booed by Kenyans coming from that particular region who are angered by their decision to have the deputy president impeached. We've seen up to 4 senior politicians from the region being chased away from addressing crowds.
Barack Odwa is the political reporter for the People Daily of Kenya. He was speaking with us from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The World Health Organization, WHO, is calling on governments and stakeholders to invest in the health sector. Speaking during the opening ceremony of the World Health Summit 2024 in Berlin, Germany, WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus said investment is a critical step in strengthening the ability of health systems to tackle challenges like pandemics, climate change, and access to care. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
The World Health Summit is the leading global health conference and network that brings together stakeholders from the political class, science, the private sector, and the civil society from around the world. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says more investment leads to healthier population and more equitable, stable, and secure societies and economies.
And this year's World Health Assembly, member states adopted a new and ambitious strategy to save 40 million lives over the next 4 years. Delivering that strategy requires a strong and sustainably financed WHO, which is why we have launched the first WHO investment round to mobilize upfront the predictable funding we need to do our work over the next 4 years.
The 3-day event is being held in Berlin, Germany, virtually under the theme Building Trust for a Healthier World. Tedros says when people lose trust in healthcare, the consequences become deadly.
Everything we do depends on the trust of the communities we serve. Strong partnerships are built on trust. Trust has always been the foundation of medicine and public health. People won't use a medicine they don't trust, or see a health worker they don't trust, or follow advice they don't trust.
Among the subjects of discussion during the summit are financing global health solutions, creating a roadmap to future resilience, strategies for women's and children's health, pathways to action for equity, strengthening voices for impact, and artificial intelligence in health. African Centers for Disease Control Deputy Director General Tajuddin Mohamed Raji says Africa is far from achieving an adequate healthcare workforce due to lack of support.
For instance, if you look at the field epidemiology training program at the advanced level, we talk of ratio 1 to 200,000. Today in Africa, we are far from that because for a population of 1.4 billion people, you are talking of roughly 7,000, epidemiologists. So to really address some of the recurrent outbreaks on the continent, we need to support workforce.
A research fellow at the University of Cape Town, Bessie Malila, says in South Africa and other African countries, technology and computers are used to analyze and create clinical documentation.
For TB, there is opportunities for computer-aided detection. We're looking at cough detection using AI technologies, latent TB detection. We're looking at radiomic technologies, also looking at AI-driven image analysis and transfer learning. Opportunities for patient tracking, self-counseling, risk determination, rapid testing, and linkage to care. Opportunities in applying AI in linkage to HIV care.
The World Health Summit leaders say trust between different levels of governance is essential for better decision-making in public health emergencies. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
A new World Bank report on Sunday shows that the world's 26 poorest countries
home to 40% of the most poverty-stricken people, are more in debt than at any time since 2006, and increasingly vulnerable to natural disasters and other shocks. The study finds that these economies are poorer today on average than they were in the eve of the COVID-19 pandemic, even as the rest of the world has largely recovered from COVID and resumed its growth trajectory. According to Reuters, the report confirms a major setback to efforts to eradicate extreme poverty and underscores the World Bank's efforts this year to raise $100 billion to replenish its financing fund for the world's poorest countries. The report said that two-thirds of the 26 poorest countries are either in armed conflicts or have difficulty maintaining order because of institutional and social fragility, which inhibits foreign investment and nearly all export commodities, exposing them to frequent boom and bust cycles. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the world record performance of Kenya's Ruth Chepngetich, who obliterated the women's marathon world record by almost 2 minutes on Sunday as she won the Chicago Marathon in 2 hours, 9 minutes, 56 seconds. The 30-year-old Chepngetich, who became the first three-time women's winner of the Chicago Marathon, broke the previous world record of 2 hours, 11 minutes, 53 seconds, set by Ethiopia's Tigist Ashit last year in Berlin. Chepngetich, who became the first woman to break 2 hours and 10 minutes in the marathon, has had an impressive record at the Chicago Marathon. She won the race in 2021 and 2022 and finished a runner-up last year.
I feel so great. I am much proud of myself and I thank God for the victory and the world record. This is my dream that has come true. I fight a lot thinking about world record. I have fulfilled it and I am much grateful. This year, the weather was perfect. I can say I was much prepared. I prepared well. Since London, it's like 4 months or 3 months. Yeah, and I was much prepared.
Sutumi Ashefa Kibede of Ethiopia finished second on Sunday in 2 hours, 17 minutes, 32 seconds, with Kenya Irene Chiptai third in 2 hours, 17 minutes, 52 seconds. In the men's race, John Kuria of Kenya won his first major marathon title after running a personal best of 2 hours, 2 minutes, 43 seconds. The 27-year-old Kuria finished ahead of Ethiopia's Mohamed Essar, who came in 2 hours, 4 minutes, 39 seconds, and another Kenyan, Amos Kipruto, who took the third position in 2 hours, 4 minutes, 50 seconds. In football news, South Africa were crowned champions in both the boys and girls competitions at the CAF African Schools Football Championship COSAFA qualifier in Malvis Bay, Namibia on Sunday as they defended their title to secure a place at the finals. The boys beat Zambia 4-2 on penalties after they had played to a 1-1 draw, while the girls had to come from behind as they defeated Malawi 3-1 in their decider. It maintains South Africa's 100% record in the competition, having won both the boys and the girls competitions in the previous two editions in 2022 and 2023. Staying with CAF competitions, title holders Cote d'Ivoire are among six countries with perfect records as the 2025 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers approaches the halfway mark. The Elephants are joined by record title holders Egypt, host Morocco and Algeria as the countries that have won all their matches after 3 matches played in the qualifying campaign. DR Congo are also joined by Angola as the countries to amass maximum 9 points in their various groups as match day 4 of the qualifiers gets on the way. And that does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, October 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us.
For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.